We're live at EXT with Constance Howman. Hi, Constance.
Hi.
Thanks for making the trip here today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Constance, you've had an album out for a couple of years now called Falling Into Now. We're playing one of the songs, right? I think it's a beautiful album. I wanted to ask you about it. You have a very sonically pleasing sound. There's like some, I don't even know how to describe it. There's just some sort of overarching feel to the sound of the record. What were you going for with that?
I guess because I've been in theater and opera my whole life, I hear and see music in a very theatrical way, in a cinematic way. So even though I write all the songs at the piano, we start doing the production, I hear the orchestral components to make the songs just more come to life.
This is essentially a pop album,
yeah,
popular music, but this isn't the world that you come from. You came from singing on the operatic stage.
Yes.
I want to talk a little bit about that, but first,
sure.
What made you decide to step into the popular mainstream music world?
Well, I have to say it wasn't really a choice, and it was kind of a shock that it even happened because, I mean, I was a secret pianist, and I read music, obviously, and had the skill of being a really good sight reader, so I could learn roles at the last minute, which I did many times in my career. And I pull out my Mozart sonatas and everything just for myself and my own enjoyment, and people were always surprised to find out I could play. But what I always really wanted to do, jazz and play and hear, you know, the music I heard in my head. I couldn't play by ear, and it was very frustrating to me because it was so bizarre that I could learn some of the longest opera scores ever written. And I would always hear not just my part, just the soprano part, I would hear the whole score. And I've worked with a lot of new composers. A couple of times they would say to me, you have a brain like a composer, like you hear it, but I'm like, oh no, not me. And my piano teacher growing up was a wonderful composer. So my life really kind of collapsed at every, just, it was like a nuclear bomb got dropped on it in many ways. And I like to say I was sort of pushed to the point of madness, and I had to start over in a lot of ways. For me, it was like a miracle. I started painting my apartment, like huge murals, and had a synesthesia-like reaction to the colors, like ran to the piano, and I started matching tone. Now, when I think back on it, that the key to my brain unlocking was after doing all this opera, and I'd done a lot of theater as well. I had, during the last, I would say, the 2000s, I became very close to Gary Marshall, Pretty Woman, and Laverne and Shirley, and all of that. And I did the first opera he ever directed, La Grande Duchesse, or The Grand Duchess, for LA Opera. Then I did my one-woman show at his theater, the Falcon. Out of the blue, he asked me to do Souvenir of Fantasy on Florence Foster Jenkins. Florence Foster Jenkins was someone I listened to in college, and in music school we'd all, you know, die laughing because those of your listeners who have never heard of her, there was just a movie last year of Meryl Streep playing her. She was a real life figure in New York City who she couldn't sing in tune at all, but sold out Carnegie Hall faster than, they say in retrospect, than even the Beatles did later, because everyone came to see her, from Cole Porter to Lula Bankhead. Everyone did see, like, is this the greatest comedy act of all time, or does this woman really, she can't hear herself? And the play is so touching. It's a two-person play. I, of course, became crazy about researching her life and discovering she was a pianist and wanted to live in Paris. She had a sister who died. She married a doctor who then was a big womanizer and ruined her life, and her parents didn't want her to marry him. She never let them know that she was like really in a bad way and had no money, and she started teaching piano in Pittsburgh, and she was in a terrible carriage accident, wrecked her arm, so she couldn't play anymore, but she loved music passionately. Her father had disowned her, died, and so her mother inherited all the money, got Florence back, you know, into her arms again, and took her to New York City, and she had a lot of money, and she created this persona of being a singer. But I discovered too, because her husband had given her syphilis, she was taking mercury, and that's what made her hearing the tinnitus, so that maybe she really did think she was singing in tune. So the point of this long explanation is that it was so hard for me at first to sing all the arias I'd sung for 20 some years and sing them out of tune and completely out of tune. And I just couldn't let go. And then the one day in rehearsal where it happened, not only was it the most fun I've ever had in my life, and just hilarious, I think that's what happened later, because it was like a year and a half later I started writing music, because that part of my brain that was all about control and being perfect, because in the classical world it is about perfection, something released in my brain. It was also perfect timing because it came along right when I needed glasses. So to be able to start playing by ear, not needing glasses anymore, that was great. It all felt like a miracle. And the writing, it was like having panic attacks where there's just so much music coming through and lyrics coming through that I couldn't capture it all. And I have two vintage suitcases at home full of my lyrics, because it just became like this crazy manic thing to get out years of all kinds of dark things, sad things. It was actually a second marriage that had collapsed terribly, gone through a very dark phase because of this person's addictions and my trap, getting trapped in it.
We're live at EXT with Constance Howman. We're going to have you play a couple of songs. Your album, Falling Into Now, is out now, and you'll be releasing another album in January.
Yes, my second one.
That one's called High Tides. What would you like to play first?
I think I'll play Angels, because it sort of describes, the lyrics describe all the different roles I played in my life, or that women play, or even and men play, and then you finally come to the realization of what's the most important to you. And for me, it was music, which was always important, but I think I took it for granted because I had been a musician and performer my whole life. All the other dramas were taking precedent, you know, and then, so this song is really about that.
I've been a mother, I've been a maid, and some say the sucker that stayed and stayed. I guess it all helped me to find the key of singing blue. I've been a people pleaser, been a class clown. I've been so low I thought I would drown. I guess it all helped me to find the key of singing new. Angels knew after the fall there would be only you. Hey, I love those angels. I've been a wife, I've been a child, and some say a lover who wouldn't stay a while. I guess it all helped me to find the key of singing true. I took roads across the globe, roads too heavy with too many loads. I took roads both hither and yon, roads too dark to carry on. Twists and turns along the way, asking for fate to bring come what may. Oh, I love those angels. It's never fate, it's the angels. I've been a sinner, I've been a judge, and yes, I've been afraid to admit all I've fudged, but I guess it all helped me to find the key of hearing you. How insane I had to go so far, tripping around the world with a broken heart, to finally find the hidden pearl at home. It's you. Somehow the angels knew after the fall there would be only you. Sound in the rhythm of hearing you. Don't you know we all play a part in who we are and where thou art? There's only love you can take anything with you. Somehow the angels knew after the fall there would be only. Angels,
This is Constance Howman, and you've left regular radio behind. You're listening to Exit 97.7 and 106.1 WEXT.
And I wonder if this will be the last song I waste on you. My days are good, I found my way. Still there are times I want to say I miss the light didn't have. Poets say love conquers all. That was true till I took the fall for all the lies that you told. Lies that you told. And so I choose kind of pain, and I wonder if you've done the same, or you just are moving on. Gotta keep moving on. Perhaps we'll meet when we are older, and our stories will have been retold by those who heal us. Can you heal all? Oh, it's a love conquers all. That was true till I took the fall for all the lies that you told. Times like these I want to share, but my heart would never dare to let you in again. Let you in again. And so I choose this kind of pain, and I wonder if you've done the same, or you just kept moving on. Perhaps we'll meet when we are older, and our stories will have been retold by those who heal hearts. Can you heal my heart? Heal my heart. Heal my heart.
Live at EXT with Constance Howman. That song, Eclipse, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I finally put my finger on what I'm hearing. It's atmospheric, has a touch of jazz and a touch of sort of an operatic theater kind of feel to it. It's very neat.
Thank you.
You said it's very early on, but when you got that call from Leonard Bernstein, were you ever expecting that to happen?
It's a really, really crazy story, and it's kind of a long one. I'm trying to tell an abbreviated version. My piano teacher in Toledo, Ohio's daughter was married to Andre Watts. I was very blessed that he was in our family circle, and he was the reason I got to move to New York at first. I was singing Tales of Hoffman in 1986. Oh, that dates me with Jerry Hadley. May he rest in peace. One of the greatest tenors. I was singing Olympia, and he said to me, you know, have you ever sung Cunegonda and Candide? I was like, yes, of course. Not the whole role, but the aria. I use it all the time for auditions. He said, well, you need to audition because I just found out I'm doing Candide in 1989 with Leonard Bernstein in London. And I was like, oh, yeah, sure, Jerry. I'm just going to call him up. You know, even though, yeah, okay. He said, I'm going to mention your name, you know, to someone. We'll see what happens. So I was at a party in New York and met this psychic named Frank Andrews. He came up to me and said, well, you know, you've got the gift. He said, you need to come for a reading. And of course, I was immediately intrigued. And we became great friends. I had just left Toronto. What happened during that Tales of Hoffman was the other Olympia canceled. So I ended up doing all the shows. And that was the beginning of this vibe where I always fill in for people who cancel energetically, I think, in the universe. So I went to Frank and he said, there's something that's going to happen. That's like a moment of destiny with a conductor like Bernstein. And I went, oh my God, I know this works. You're reading my mind. Because I just had this conversation with Jerry Hadley. And he's like, no, I don't know. It's like something you cannot avoid. And then months go by and my manager says, you're on a short list for possible Cunegondas. I need you to come down to my place and sing. I had just gotten my first contract in Europe and I was going to be leaving in a few months to sing William Tell in Paris. So I sang Glitter and Be Gay for her. And she said, you know, when you're in Paris, I want to arrange for you to record this on video so I could show this to Bernstein. I go to Paris. I do this recording and I hate the video. I think it's awful. And I tell my manager, please don't send this to him. Thank God he didn't listen to me. I don't hear anything back. And several months go by and then it's like, oh, well, that's not going to happen because they've hired June Anderson, who was a huge star. So it's like, of course. And I'm not even the understudy. So I was like, oh, well, nice dream. And I go back to Frank. We're doing the cards. And he's like, this is so strong. You've got to believe it's going to happen because it's unavoidable. It's happening. And when you meet him, it's like you're in a coat and there's something about the recording you don't get to do, but it will be very important to you later in life. And I was now engaged to my first husband, Richard Cowan, who was a great bass baritone, who's no longer with us now either. I had rented his apartment in Paris. He was singing at the Théâtre de la Monnaie in Brussels. And I looked like a complete failure because I had no jobs. I turned them all down. And it was clear I was not the understudy and I was not doing it. So I went to Paris and it was December 9th. The performances were taking place in London on the 12th and the 13th. So I decided to go visit Richard and surprise him in Brussels and take only a toothbrush because he was already, I should have known our marriage was doomed because he was already like put out with all the luggage I travel with. So I showed up just in a great outfit and nothing. And I walk into his dressing room and there were all these post-its, urgent, Richard Cowan, call the London Symphony Orchestra. First he's like, oh my God, what are you doing here? And then he's like, oh, can you please call? He was getting makeup. Someone's been calling me. They need to talk to me from the London Symphony. And it never occurred to me it was for me. I was just like, wow, this really sucks because I could have been doing something, you know, been in Flater Mouse or something. None of the phones work in the opera house. And this was before I didn't have a cell phone because those were the clunky 80s phones. So I go out to the plaza and call the London Symphony. I thought, oh God, I'm going to just say I'm his secretary. So I was like, hello, this is Richard Cowan's secretary. And she's like, oh, this is Kathy Nelson. We're not looking for Richard. We're looking for Constance Hallman. And I was like, oh my God, I'm Constance Hallman. And she said, oh, well, can you get him to London right away? Because June Anderson is ill and Maestro Bernstein would like you to come. And I was like that. I mean, it was like what? No clothes. I hadn't sung a note for like 2 weeks. I had not learned the whole role. I only knew the two duets and the aria. I go running back into the opera house. I fell down and ripped the only pair of pantyhose I had. Richard sees me. I was like, I gotta leave. And he's like, what? Did someone die? I was like, maybe me. I have to sing Candide. Someone in the hallway heard me talking about it because I didn't have a score. He had a score and went with him in the cab to his apartment, got the score, went to the airport, landed in London, had to sit there and wait to get a work permit. So the next morning they call me and say, now they tell me the rehearsal's been moved to 10 because Lenny's not feeling well and there would be a taxi there at 9. Terrible traffic, raining, Irish driver. We pull in front of the Barbican. I'm like 5 minutes late. And Humphrey Burton, who later became a great friend and a biographer of Lenny, was at first scary and mean and like, good God, what are you late? I don't even know what I'm doing here. The door flings open and I have on a white fake fur long coat. And Frank had said, it's weird. It's like you have your coat on when you meet him. And I always, no matter how many years it's been, I get so emotional when I think of that. There was Lenny standing there, my idol. And there was Jerry Hadley sitting up there with Nikolai Gedda and Christa Ludwig and the whole London Symphony Chorus. And their mouths were just, Jerry's mouth was just like, oh. Lenny embraces me and I have on my coat and he could see the terror in my face. And he turns to the orchestra and they start playing Glitter and Begay. And I sang Glitter and Begay in my coat and I killed it. And there was a woman in a pink suit in the audience. She ran out when she heard me say, maestro, I don't know the rest of the role. And he goes, good God, someone get her in a room. I got whisked away into a room with Lucas Brown, who was his brilliant assistant. And that night was the dress rehearsal for the public. I hadn't eaten, hadn't slept, and then rehearsed for 8 hours learning the role. And I kept saying, please, my angels, if I meant to do this, please give me another day or something, because I have nothing to wear either. I thought if I can just get through the aria again and kill it in front of the audience, if I fumble over this stuff sight reading, I'll be okay. Except when I was ready to walk on stage for the dress rehearsal, June Anderson showed up and she sang through what I knew, which was the aria and the two duets, and then she fainted. And then I had to come on stage and sing everything I didn't know. And I was so tired and so terrible that they stopped the rehearsal and everyone was yelling at me, like Humphrey Burton, and I like, what are you doing here? And what have you done? And I'm like, I've been working all day and I haven't slept and I don't even have a contract and I don't even know why I'm here. Jerry saw my terror and he said, just go knock on Lenny's door and tell him the whole story and tell him your connection to Andre and tell him everything. I knocked on the door and it's like, who is it? I go, it's Constance. And he goes, come in. So I was like, literally duck in there. And there I am alone with him in his dressing room. And I just blabbed it all out. And then he says, do you sing Lulu? I have no. You need to look at Lulu. What else do you sing? Sophie and Rosenkavalier here. Okay, that's a good one. And I was like, what is going on? And I said, maestro, if I just can sleep, if she doesn't really cancel, I know I can do it. I just need another day. And so he patted me on my cheek and he goes, don't goof up. And walked out. In the morning, they called me and said, Lenny's really sick. June isn't going to sing. You're on tonight, maybe, but you have to come in and sing the aria. We've flown in another soprano and we both need you to perform for the camera. So I just gave a performance like, oh, screw it. I'm just going to do it like pretend I'm on MTV. And the other girl was very choir-like. And then I stormed out. Humphrey came running after me and he said, if she really doesn't sing, we want you. You're the one who's going to go on tonight. I said, well, I don't have anything to wear. He's what? I don't have any clothes. This is it. And he said, oh, well, orchestra manager, Kathy Nelson, her sister has a dress hire shop. So I have to drive you. So we drive to Islington and in the window was the blue dress that Frank kept saying I was going to wear blue. And it was like Cinderella, it fit me. Went back to the theater, got made up. Then what happens is June Anderson decides she's going to sing. So they hide me in the broom closet. And Christa Ludwig, I'm like standing there and she goes, it's never over till it's over. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm standing here in a mop closet. So then coast is clear, I can come out. I'm watching her backstage with Humphrey on the television cameras. It's clear she's really sick. It's clear Jerry's sick. He says, you're gonna sing tomorrow for sure. I go out to get a cab. He lets me leave early. I go out to get a cab. It's the same guy who drove me the day before. And I didn't know anyone. So I said, if I really sing tomorrow, you get my tickets. I slept till 3 o'clock, which was a miracle because I needed all my brain power. They came banging on my door saying, oh my God, the Barbican's trying to reach you. You're on tonight. And that was the night the Emperor of Japan was there. I got to do it. And at the end, when Lenny gave me a big hug in front of everyone, oh my God. And he whispered in my ear, you forgot a word. And then it was very, you know, bittersweet because he died 6 months after that, but he had hired me to do L'Enfant et les Sortilèges with him with the London Symphony, and so instead I did it with Michael Tilson Thomas, and then of course I went on to sing Lulu a lot.
Pretty fantastic story.
Pretty magical. And Now, what's really crazy to tie it all in is that when my life fell apart, I came back to New York to my apartment that, thank God, I had hung on to all those years in the same building I'd started out babysitting Andre Watts's apartment. And I now had inherited his piano through his divorce. And so I started writing on that piano, and 65th Street, I live in 66, 65th Street became Leonard Bernstein Way. I feel like I'm still in the bubble.
We're live at EXT with Constance Howman. Constance, your record Falling Into Now is out, and you're about to release High Tides.
Yes.
What would you like to play to finish up here?
Oh, wow. It's a very simple song called Waiting For You.
When there's restlessness inside, we're all meant to be dreamers. That's why the stars don't lie. Now they say there's a super planet that the eye will never see, but I've heard the harmony that connect the trees. That's why I know I was waiting for you, waiting for you. Time is an illusion. Scientist once said, home is where the heart is. That's never left my head. And there were times I couldn't see the forest through the trees, and the pain and the beauty of life brought me. That's why I know I was waiting for change life every day. And there were times I listened to negativity, but now all I believe in is electricity. That's why I know.
This is Constance Howman. Thank you for being a member of WEXT Radio.